Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate your time. There's so much going on in the world today. It's just amazing the scientific breakthroughs that are happening almost hourly, the technology that we are seeing coming online, the space program, all of the things that are happening right now are so incredibly fantastic beyond belief, because when you look at, you know, the history of how quickly things have changed. When I was a kid, we didn't have microwaves. And, to, you know, now that's like almost an essential, at least in the Western world, to a microwave. I don't have one now because I'm picky, but the thing about this is that with that, we're also experiencing this wonderful, I think, evolution and expansion of consciousness. And so I wanted to talk. I've talked with Rosalind before, Rosalind Byrne. She is multifaceted. She has a background in science, and she also has the ability to communicate with animals. Horses was that was, she fell off a horse and all of it came right there up close and personal. She could hear the horse talk. Now, I'm just really condensing this, but I just want to get to the story. All right. Rosalind has a ranch, a horse ranch now, out of all this. And I want to find out what happened, because this is so fantastic to have lived your life a certain way in a certain direction. And then all of a sudden, overnight, there's this new ability that just comes online and says, hey, guess what? You're an intuitive. Hi, Rosalind. How are you doing?
Hi, Wendy. Thanks for having me back.
I want to find out now, because I've seen the pictures on your website of all the horses, and you've got a new book out, at least two or three since I talked to you last. You've been busy.
Yeah.
The first one was When the Horses Whisper, and that's when we connected with that. But you've also got Waking to Beauty and the newest, Walking with Raven. And so you were just getting started with the farm, I think, and one horse, and all of a sudden now you have several. How has this progressed?
Oh, goodness. Well, so let's see. 2 years ago today, I was living in an urban setting in the center of Charlottesville, Virginia, in a house in a neighborhood with houses that are really close together, and minding my own business, as I would like to say. And I was asked to go to a place in Richmond called the Virginia Equine Welfare Society to help with a horse who they were having a lot of trouble with. They'd gotten her off of a trailer on her way to a place that ships horses off to essentially become meat for markets in Europe and Canada and Mexico, et cetera. Anyway, they were having a really, really hard time getting her settled in, and it had been 6 months and they didn't know what to do. So I went and I was working with Ruby, and then I was looking and communicating with another horse, and a horse named Raven, who was also in residence there as a rescue. Raven walked mm-hmm. up behind me while I'm in conversation with another horse. Now, I'm getting to the answer to your question.
I
have to give the background. Okay. So while I'm talking to this other horse named Rain, Raven comes up behind me and she says, I'm the horse you've been waiting for. I'm going to help you deepen your work. Take me home with you. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And I looked around and I said, stop interrupting me, Raven. I'm talking to Rain.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
So I continue talking to Rain, and Raven's right there, and she persists. And I said, I heard you. Thank you. I'll consider it. And I couldn't get her out of my mind. I couldn't get her out of my heart. I thought about her for days. And finally, I said to my husband, I think I'm supposed to go get Raven. And he said, we live downtown Charlottesville. I said, I know. I don't have any explanation for why or what or how, but I think we need to go get her. So I found out that one of the first people who gave me the opportunity to communicate with her horse actually boarded horses. And I called her and she said, I'll do anything to support your work, anything. We have room for her here. So I went to get Raven and I took her down to this facility, which was about a 45-minute drive from my home. And after visiting with Raven on weekends for about 2 months, I thought, this won't do. I want to be with her every day. So I had a discussion with my husband. We put our house on the market. We went looking. And we ended up with a farm about 20 minutes east of the city. And we moved there maybe 2 years in July. The thing is, you can't have one horse because they are herd animals. And It's not just because I'm a softie. It's because that's what they need. They need each other, right? That's how they function. Mm-hmm. And so the horse that I told the people at Views, you know, well, guess what? Raven's going to live with us. We're buying a farm. And they wrote back and said, wonderful. Could you come get Ruby, too? Because nobody's adopted her.
Yes. Oh, by the way. That,
she was the horse I went to help, who was a snippy, troublesome son of a gun. And I brought her here as a companion for Raven. And then after about 4 months, my husband was working his tail off trying to help me. I didn't know anything about farm life. Yeah. And he was trying to help me run this place and take care of the horses. And we were out there picking up, you know, horse dew every day and spreading it and feeding all this work. And finally, one day he looks at me, he goes, there's you and there's your two mares. And then there's me. I need some more masculine energy and I want my own horse. What am I doing this for? So we went and got Nash, who is a gelding. And now we have three, and they are our family.
Yay. Yeah. See, that's the thing. When you're saying it's been 2 years, it's like this was a quick turnaround from the time that you realized that you could hear. Okay. And so for anybody who hasn't heard that, just a quick refresher on you didn't know you could do this until you rode the horse and had an unfortunate little fall. And then
it changed. That unfortunate little fall changed my whole life. That unfortunate little fall turns out to have been an awakening, I think, because I what can I say? We were crossing a river on horseback in Costa Rica. I was there alone, grieving from the end of a 30-year marriage and struggles with my son, who was dealing with some pretty serious mental health issues. And I just went to take a break and finish a novel I was working on and just sort of restore myself. And I'm crossing the river, and I'm thinking, oh, la, 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 this is fun. And then, boom, I'm in the water. And I did not hit my head on a rock. I did not get a concussion. I just got up, and I was laughing for pure joy. I had felt this amazing opening, this burst of joy. And I'm laughing, and I'm soaked. And the horse is looking back at me with trepidation, like, oh, my God. And I looked at the horse, and I patted his butt. I said, I'm fine. Don't worry about me. Uh-huh. And I got back up on that horse, and I began to hear him speak as if we were having a conversation. He said, nobody's ever fallen off of me before. I can't believe this happened. How did this happen? Is this my fault? Am I going to get in trouble? My job is to take care of the people who ride on me, and I didn't take care of you. What's going to happen to me now? It was really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, that's so mind boggling just to know that, you know, within 5 minutes, you had a complete and total transformation.
Yes.
Now, so the story ended good for the horse because then you talk with the person and explain what was going on and the horse didn't get in trouble. But beyond that, you're able to help with other horses as well.
Horses at that particular facility, the owner was at first taken aback that I told her that her horse had a message for her. But then she needed help with other horses, one of whom she was going to have to get rid of, who was kicking and acting up on the trail rides. We were able to get that straightened out once that horse was able to explain what was going on with her, what was wrong and what she needed. And since then, it'll be 6.5 years now. Since then, I've gone back there probably 12 times.
Oh, lucky
with the
you.
Workshops. Oh, yeah. They do workshops there. Sometimes I'll just be an interpreter for the horses. I went back to get more learning and sort of, there's a horse there named Beauty who's like a teacher for me, spend time with her. That's the book, Waking to Beauty. It's sort of double entendre. It means the guidance that she's given as a sort of teacher for me, but it also means waking up, yeah, to the beauty within us. So there's all that. Meanwhile, I'm still a professor in an engineering school trying to figure out how do these worlds come together? You know, what does this mean?
Yes. But see, I think I love that because when I was looking at the other books that you have done, and this is one I hadn't seen, Creating Life from Life, Biotechnology and Science Fiction in 2015. And this talks about, you know, the direction we're going with all of this, with all of our technology and what's going to be happening. And you can relate it to the AI scene right now, where it's just absolutely rocketing forward of of this kind of, whether it's augmented reality, virtual reality, or artificial intelligence, all of these things are giving us incredible new visions and new, I think, potential in what we can do to, it's, I think, advance on so many levels in our world. And yet, remember, as you are empathic and you are telepathic and you are intuitive in your own environment, to bring that to the equation too. That doesn't go away. It brings a different layer to this technology. And I think that's where these two need to meet. Does that make sense?
Of course. Absolutely. And my students, who are 99% millennials, they're open in a wonderful way. We always start every single class with 5 minutes of mindfulness practice together. And I think, you know, they don't question it. In fact, sometimes they'll say, are we going to do that today? So I think they are not stuck in, like, this versus that, black versus white, material versus spiritual. I think they're much more interested in making a difference in the world, whatever it takes. So I feel at home with them. Intellectually, I'm trying to figure out sort of how do I write about what I've learned from the horses for an audience of people who are engineers and teaching engineers. You know, what can I say that can contribute to us moving forward with technology in ways that are whole and healthy for who we are and for the wellness of the earth and its creatures.
Well, part of it, though, is that through your own experience, you found that it wasn't about linear thinking. I mean, your experience was physical, and falling off the horse, which gave you a nice little bump, said that you need a readjustment. And part of this in our world isn't taking yourself away from all of the tactile, the feeling, the being active in your environment. And that's where relating that to people, if you just speech, you know, just talking, doesn't give them that experience of riding, of being with another living, sentient being, which the horses are so good about being present. For one thing, I think because of their size, that you can't miss them. You can't ignore them like you tried with Raven. Go away. I'm busy. And she's like, yeah, right. Okay, come on. I'm important. Get a clue. But that's it. I think, and that's why I think you have that reminder of what happened for you and how essential that is in making that, creating some kind of a bridge between the two worlds.
That's right. And that's what the book Waking to Beauty comes to at the end, is the realization for me that in my own spiritual journey of decades, where it's brought me is not out there, but in here more deeply, into a sensing way of being, because that's what gives the deepest sense of connection to other beings, other animals, other human animals, other animals on the planet. And I think it's that sense of connection to other that's going to be what we must bring into the development of these new technologies, or I think they can be dangerous.
There are a lot of people saying right now, especially with artificial intelligence, be careful, be careful, be careful, because it is so incredibly fast learning and self-evolving that it may get out of our ability to rein it back in, and we're not that smart on some levels, you know, because that with that, it is an incredible technology that we have yet to really understand what the greatest potential is with it. You see that as being a challenge.
Well, there are a lot of warnings in the popular culture about this. There are all kinds of TV shows that are looking at this. My students introduced me to Black Mirror, which comes out of England, I believe, which I can't handle it. It's too horrifying for me. But I wrote about some of this in my own novel. It came out 12 years ago, Waiting in Silence, sort of predicting some of what we're now grappling with. But these shows are horrendous in the way they portray the dehumanity that is possible when we give over our intellect to these systems. And they become smarter and faster, better at processing information and making decisions. And so it's out there. It's all through the popular culture, these warnings. I think that what we know about engineering is that it can make life much, much better for everybody in lots of ways. But what I'm seeing with some of these newer processes is that we are readily giving ourselves over to them, mm-hmm. and losing our sense of ourselves in the process. And that's, I think, where the danger comes in. That's where we have to re-embody and come back into the senses. And that's where the horses can be so helpful. And there are horse programs flourishing all over the world to help people with trauma and learning. In part, I think you're right, their size, but they are so focused on embodied knowledge and awareness. Their senses are extremely heightened because that's how they survive as prey. And they're also very present. And what's happening with us is we are highly distracted now and distractible.
Yeah.
And our minds are trying to keep up with our devices, which move much faster than our own brains process information, which throws us off kilter. It disturbs our sleep, and it leads us to forget about the embodied senses and how critical those are for informing and guiding us. And so I'm trying, Walking to Raven is not out yet. I'm still working on that. But what the message I'm trying to bring forward in the writing and also the new workshops I'm offering is we have to almost, as we move forward, we have to move back into the body. As we move forward, we keep moving back into the body and into the senses. There are some who say, the body is flawed. DNA is flawed. We need to replace it anyway. It's slow. In fact, there are people like Ray Kurzweil who say, eventually we should be living through something other than this DNA-driven slow body. He'd rather be uploaded.
Yes.
Living, right? And it's like,
yes.
Well, okay, good luck out there. You know, that's a vision some people have, but we won't be human anymore when we make that choice.
Well, I was thinking, I just saw something today on the forecast that some people are predicting for the next, 500 years or so. And that was one where you upload your consciousness. So technically, in some way, you're not dying. You are going to live on through some kind of another entity, and it would be a technology of some kind. I don't think that's alive. I think that's, again, that's an artificial element, and the consciousness is a complete, I don't think they understand what consciousness is for one thing. It's not attached to one physical body. It's beyond that. Okay. We're getting into a different conversation. Okay. Well, so what do you, thoughts on that?
Okay. So no, I have written about this, and I've thought about it, and I've been in the presence of people who are brilliant, who believe that that is the way to go. I mean, even go back to Walt Disney. Walt Disney's brain is cryopreserved in a vat in Arizona because he was hoping one day they could revive him by bringing his brain back alive. Now,
yeah.
It's not attached to his body, but he figured that wouldn't matter. They could put it on another one. And that's back, you know, we believed at that time, and a lot of people still do, that that's who we are, that who we are is our brain.
Right.
And if we can preserve that and bring it back somehow, then we'll come back again. I think that we don't know quite enough yet about consciousness to know that that's true.
Yeah.
I think we're learning
yeah.
more and more about our connection to other organs and how, in fact, for some cultures and in some studies, it would appear to be that the seat of the self is actually the heart, or at least connected to the brain is the heart. And so if you only have one that you revive and you don't revive it with the heart has memory, you're actually losing a significant part of who you are. So I think that there's a lot of fantasy in that desire. I think that many of us are still mortified, literally, at the thought of death and don't want to consider it and think that somehow technology will be our salvation. It's another kind of religion in a way, right?
Mm-hmm.
To yeah. live on. And so I don't personally think that that will mean we will be human. If in fact any way we can bring part of our memory into machines to continue, that'll be something, but it won't be us and it won't be human.
To me, it'll be like an app. Okay, this is the Wendy app. It's just a little tiny bit of version of what we would think, you know, in a nutshell, this is the Wendy app. I'm like, wait.
I think you're right.
That's,
I like that.
Well, yeah, but that's it. You can't put the whole thing. I mean, when I'm an intuitive, and the stuff that I got just tuning into this years ago was that, you know, the soul, the aspect, the greater part of us, that higher consciousness awareness is the alphabet A to Z. And the one that shows up here, the bit of us that we can finally put in this little tiny shoe that we wear around as this body, this little shoebox or whatever it is, this little vehicle, is one letter of that alphabet. And to expand your consciousness, when you do that, then you get access to more letters. But in totality, the letters are beyond anything you could possibly manage if you were to do the whole thing. That's beyond enlightenment even. You know, it's just, but that's the thing, to trying to put it into some kind of an analogy that this, again, if you took the Wendy and then put that, the W that showed up, and put that into an app, by doing that, you're only getting part of the W. So one leg of the W goes into an app, and the rest of it goes back to front and center home.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, you also do deep listening with horses. This is what you were talking about, the seminars, a doorway to growth. And what do you do with those experiences? We're going to have to go into another, carry this on through the next part of the show, but just to introduce that.
I just loaded that up as an offering starting this spring. Early summer. Brand new. You caught it. In fact, I think the day you wrote to me was the day I had my webmaster post it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I have been resisting, thinking, no, I'll just do my day job, focused on that. And then my husband looked at me and said, we live on a farm. We have the horses here. We have these beautiful facilities. What are we doing here?
I like your husband.
I'll go inside and ask.
Yes.
All right. Because it's a lot of work. It's a huge amount of work. And I went inside and I asked that which leads and guides. And it was like, yeah, you know what? It's right here in front of you. The gift is here. The need is here. Your space is here. Time to go. So deep listening. That is actually returning to center core embodied and then using the energies of the earth, the water, the sky, and fire in the presence of horses to be able to really hear oneself, hear others, and hear other beings, other animals, other beings, from that place where you have to go in order to be able to do that. So that's my quick before your break explanation.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is about that, that's in a way unplugging, and it takes a little while to make that. And I think having the horse there with you is essential for the redirect, because they're present. And they're waiting for you to unwind, deprogram, and reconfigure whatever it is that helps you engage with another being. And that I love. I mean, from the time I was little, I drew pictures of horses because I wanted a horse, and I got one when I was 10 and a half. And she was fantastic. And then she had several foals, other horses. And the one that was eventually mine was her first son, Sonny. And he was one of those things where he was present for me. And there was a way that you're connected, but without even knowing it. And at the same time, the time was too short. I wish that life had lasted a little longer, but for that, it doesn't ever go away. Once you make the connection, it's, you carry it. And
because it can potentially open your heart.
To know.
Yes. Good. Sorry to interrupt, Bob, but I really appreciate your sharing about Sonny.
Oh, no. I had to go to college, and so then my stepfather decided that I wasn't home enough to connect with my horse, so the horse was gone. And I just, you know, those kinds of things, that's a heart connection, and you don't lose it. But at the same time, I also knew that he was there when I needed him. And just because he left and went to somebody else didn't mean that hadn't been important and hadn't happened. And it was a lesson, a life lesson that I think you don't get unless you really experience it one way or the other with another being. And That's why it's like, okay, it's difficult for me to talk about it.
Yeah, and I need to say something to you about it too.
Yeah. So those kinds of things, though, they allow us to understand how important our connections are with animals, and that they aren't lesser beings. They meet us right at our heart. And I think that's why we're here. So we're going to take a quick break. And again, if you're listening, Rosalind Byrne, you can check out her website and find out about the workshops there, rosalindbyrne.com. Okay, we're going to come back and talk about more deep listening with horses.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat. Or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
This is why you work so hard to pay the mortgage. Because home is more than four walls and a roof. It's that porch swing on a summer night. It's pajamas with feet and everybody over for Sunday dinner. And that old stuffed chair in the living room you just can't get rid of. This is why you work a second job. This is why you learn to fix things yourself, so you can save on repairs. Because home is your place, your memories, your family sleeping in their own beds at night. And that is why we want to help. We are Making Home Affordable, a free government resource that can make paying the mortgage easier. And now even more options are available. Call 888-995-HOPE today. That's 888-995-HOPE. Or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Good night, Mama.
This is why. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
If a disaster struck right now, what would you and your family do first? Would you stay where you are or leave? What if you and your family were separated? Would your kids know what to do? How would you get in touch with them if your cell phone isn't working or the subways aren't running? Don't wait until a disaster strikes to figure it out. It's your responsibility to make a plan for you and your family ahead of time. To learn how, take our readiness challenge at nyc.gov/readynewyork or call 311 for information. In this online tool, you'll be faced with real-life challenges forcing you to make quick decisions at every turn to teach you the importance of being prepared for a disaster. Without a plan, it's like you're putting your family in a disaster. Visit nyc.gov/readynewyork or call 311 for information. A public service announcement brought to you by the New York City Office of Emergency Management and the Ad Council.
It's Conscious Living and Power Radio. Hi there, I'm Wendy. And my guest, Rosalind Byrne, is a horse communicator. And you could do that with any animals, but this happens to be about horses. And we were talking about before the break, the new sessions that she's doing called Deeper Way of Listening. And these are, there are a couple, from what I was looking on your website, there are two, May 11th and June 1st, Deep Listening with Horses, A Doorway to Growth. What is on, you have to bring your own horse or are you furnishing horses?
No, this one is not necessarily for horse people. It's for anybody who wants to do this work. And we'll be working with the three horses who are here and all on the ground. There's no riding. And about a third of the day, for a few days, is on the ground with the horses. And other parts of the day are on the property. We're going to include ritual work with the fire circle and with the stream and the elements that are bringing back into sensing awareness and, you know, this decompressing and stepping back from the other way of being, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, no. People just come as they are. It's limited to 5 people. And I've got interest, which is really good, really early immediate interest. One of these days, my mentor is telling me to, he used to run a business school, and he's telling me you have to become a not-for-profit so people like me can donate, and that way you can have scholarships to these programs. So that's the vision for eventually. Not there yet, just getting going here. We'll see what the need is. We'll see what the interest is and how it goes, and we'll all respond in kind.
Oh, I think it's fantastic. I think it's great that your horses are going to be participating. I'm sure they're going to have a ball with that, too. Oh, yay!
They're waiting. Like, what are we doing here? Where are the people we're supposed to be working with?
That's right. It's all about us. We're the reason you're here, okay?
True.
Yeah, all sorts of attention there.
Yeah.
Well, also, just for anybody who's listening, and here to give you an idea of how serious this is, day one, you're going to be at 8:30 and it goes at 9. You're at the Welcome to Willow Oak Farm Tour Introductions Cell Phone and Watch Collection. You have to give up your cell phone, no watches. The horses want your attention.
Panic attacks.
I was like, oh no, I can't text. Yeah. No selfies.
Well, you can't if you want to have this kind of experience. You know, it's like, make your choice. What do you want? You know, your choice.
But that's a reminder. That's a reminder. Okay, why are you here? This is the purpose. So take a break from the tech, you know, and that really, I think for some people, especially the people who've grown up with having a constant attachment to a cell phone and having that luxury, I grew up at an age when that wasn't possible. And so there's a complete different mentality and a frame of reference. I don't feel like there's something missing when my cell phone, which I use on rare occasions, isn't around. As a matter of fact, I insist on staying away from that. But I know people who can't. There's an anxiety that goes with that feeling. Where's the phone? That is a complete different way of living. And it takes a while to disconnect from that and reformat to it's okay not to have the phone. It's okay to be away from it, and you're not going to miss anything. And I tell you what, that's a mindset that I think that some of us who didn't grow up with the cell phone being there all the time don't have to worry about. And just to put that in a different sense of how to work with that, it's less of a hardship for me than it might be for somebody who's been used to being attached to a phone and having that there as a safety net. In my opinion, it's a safety net.
I wrote a novel called Waiting in the Silence, and in that novel, it's a science fiction. There were no cell phones because it was all hardwired into the brain, so you didn't have to worry about forgetting anything, because part of the requirement of citizenship was that you were connected anyway.
And that's frightening.
Yeah.
That's that new tech we're talking about.
Yeah, it is. Back to that. But anyway, yeah, that's the first part. The first part is to put that aside. And, you know, there's a landline for emergency phone calls and emergency contacts. But it's, it's just for the day. And you get it back at night when you go to the hotel. And,
I saw. That's nice of you. Oh, no, my mom called. She's going to kill me. I didn't return it. Yeah. Well, but that's why I was saying, you know, there's a different for people in different types of jobs, even, you know, that they don't have access to their phone all the time, where other people, they can take their phone with them and it's okay. No big deal. But there's just such a dependence now on those kinds of technologies of, did I check my Facebook? Did I check my, my email, whatever it is that I've got that keeps me connected. And that disconnect is for some people really frightening. And this, I think, is a reminder that there's so many other things you can connect to that you are available for when you disengage from whatever IV drip you've got going with technology.
You, before the break, talked about Sunny. That was his name, correct?
Yes, my horse.
Could I just take a moment and say something about that?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. A number of people, asked me to come to their farms to communicate with their horses, to see what's going on. And I would say every third or fifth conversation is about what happened to such and such a person who was in my life? And I'm remembering one particular horse who was showing me an image of a young girl, and she was like college age. And he was asking me what happened. And so I turned to the current owners and said, was there a woman, a young woman in his life before you? And they said, well, yeah. I said, well, he's grieving her. He doesn't know what he did wrong and why she's gone. And they said, well, she went off to college, so the father sold the horse, which is the story you just told, Wendy.
Yeah.
And so the reason why I'm sharing it is that we talk a lot about how good it is to have these relationships with our animals and how much they do for us. What I'm learning is that the bond is really a bond and it's mutual. And so whenever I get a chance on the air or in my writing to say, tell your animal what's going on, it will help them make the adjustment to whatever change that's happening. If you're going to move or if you're going to take them to the SPCA or give them away or sell them, please just tell them, thank you for everything you've done and for all the ways you've enriched my life. I'm so grateful to you and I'm sending you off with love and gratitude. And they will be much better off on the other side. I don't know that your dad knew to do that. Most people don't. They think they're doing the right thing practically for the care of the animal. But what's coming forward in the learning here that they're teaching me and I'm trying to share is that they miss their people. And they wonder, you know, is this punishment? Didn't I do my job well? And I didn't tell you that to make you sad or guilty. I told you that so that you could share it with your listeners.
Oh, no, I appreciate that. But let me go ahead and go a little bit further. This was a manipulation. And a lot of times, and I've dealt with people too, dealing with what's going on with horses. It was a power play. I wasn't coming home enough and there were issues. And so in order to punish me, my horse was sold. And because my stepdad didn't have the same connection, animals were tools and they were necessary from point A to point B to have a particular animal, whatever it was. And it happened to be that I wanted the horse and I had the horse Pepper, his mom, from the time that I was little. But then when I got him, he was my horse. And this was a way for my stepdad to make an impact and say I had no power. And there went my horse. So at the same time, I had to understand that there's a greater good. And things don't happen by mistake. That at least at this point, and the other thing was that there was a boy who came out to visit to see my horse. And he and his father made two or three visits and loved my horse. And my horse would love to have gone with him. But because there was a bond there, my stepfather sold him to the other guy who was going to use him as a cutting horse. And the other guy had no attachment. And so that was how my stepdad determined that the horse would go to the other person because he was less attached and he would use the horse as a horse was meant to be used as a tool. So those kinds of dynamics also come into play with animals. And I had to learn that for me, I loved my horse as long as I had him. And because I had no power to change that dynamic, that my horse was going to be safe no matter where he went, and that I had to let go and learn to let go with love. But it's taken a long time to appreciate that there are going to be people all over the world who have different values for animals, and to appreciate that that is their way. And I knew my stepdad would never understand where I wanted him to understand the value of not needing to do that to somebody else using a third party, which happened to be a horse. Does that make sense?
Well, you know, my training is not as an engineer. It's as an ethicist. I teach ethics. And what you're describing is when another being is used as a means to an end, rather than an end in of themselves. So this comes from Immanuel Kant, and this is something we would consider in that frame unethical or wrong or immoral because it had nothing to do with that horse. The horse was simply a tool being used to manipulate and control you. And so there's pain and suffering there as a result.
All the way around. But I had to go about it from the person that hurt the most in all of that wasn't me and it wasn't the horse. the person who hurt the most was my stepfather. And understanding that he didn't even know that. He just knew he was upset and I wasn't minding. And the way he could get my attention, which then backfired because then I just disconnected more, was to do something like that. And the horse is like, okie dokie, where do I go next? But so the person who was ultimately suffering was my stepfather. And was what I had to learn. And I knew, you know, that part of it, aside from the anger and the hurt and the frustration, was, you know, this wasn't about me. It was never about me. It was about, he didn't know how to deal with his emotions. And he did not understand, because that was how he had been patterned from his own upbringing. And that's what animals allow us to learn by their presence. Right. Is that, you know, these things happen on so many different levels. And sometimes your animals will even tell you about the other people and say, hey, this is triangulation, you know, and they are very aware of all of those dynamics from my experience. And, you know, that's
well, again, they don't.
No, they read the body language. They read the emotions.
They don't miss much.
And so, but I'm glad you, I mean, that's why it's so much more complicated than just saying, I loved my horse. I went to college and my stepfather sold my horse. Well, then you get the behind the scenes drama of, in that instance, what was happening. And, you know, again, it's the W out of the A to Z.
Most of the quote misbehavior of horses that I encounter in my work is reflecting the behind-the-scenes drama of the humans. In fact, 85% of it is about the behind-the-scenes drama of the humans. And the rest might be from an ailment that the horse is dealing with.
Yes.
So there you have it.
Yeah, it isn't always easy for us to tell when our animals are actually in pain. Sometimes the immediate thing is, well, they're just being difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. When you find a horse... Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, when you find a horse that does have an issue with pain, is there a way to understand better for people who do want to be a better caretaker?
Well, I do a body scan with horses, which again means going into that place where you can use your senses and deep listening. But if I run my hands over a horse's body, I can generally sense disruptions in the energy field, which point to pain or some kind of ailment, and the horse will help me with that. The horse will let me know. People who have pets, I would think that we can all do it with some practice. Mm-hmm. And also, some you have to get out of the mode of fear and the burden of responsibility. And I also think most vets are pretty well trained to tune in, but sometimes things are hard to bring to the surface, but the horse will often know and bring it forward. I was once in Costa Rica, the vet had come and done all the checks and was working on the last horse, and I went into the barn and one of the horses was like, he missed something. It's like, what's the matter? And he showed me an image of these little tiny, like, wormy things. He goes, they're all over me. They're itchy. Mm-hmm. So I told the woman who ran the place, and she went to talk to the vet, and he goes, oh, I know what those are. And he went over to the horse and he looked, he goes, yeah, here's some. They're parasites to get in the skin. I'll fix that.
Oh, yeah, here's some. Yay.
Wait a minute. Wait, don't go yet.
Yes.
And that's why this gift is so wonderful, is because, you know, you can work with people openly and share. And if people are willing to hear that the horse has more to say, you know, so much better for all of us if we're in the flow of open listening and deep listening and communication.
Well, and you work with people, like you said earlier, with horses and people who don't have horses. And just a lot of that has to do with that empathic connection. What do you advise when people are first trying to make that connection, not just with other people, but with themselves, to be able to hear from that heart level?
Oh, the breath is our best friend when it comes to slowing down that brain, that mind that's judging ourselves and that's anxious and that's fearful and worried about what could go wrong, what are people thinking, am I doing this right? Just quiet that whole thing down, and you begin by simply observing and feeling into the breath and into the beating heart and sitting with that. And then you can start to tune in more deeply. That's really probably the core of it. Their practices, you know, sometimes I'll lie on the earth. I'll just lie on the ground with a blanket because I don't like ticks or scary, you know, cold, stuff like that.
Yeah,
but,
well, okay.
You know, I protect Jiggers. Myself from the reality of those things.
Lie
there and give in to it and release everything that I'm holding on to that I don't need that keeps me from really feeling and hearing. And then get up and start to tune in and listen. There are lots of different techniques you can practice, but I tell my students the breath is your best friend. Feel it, watch it, and then center into the beating heart. And that's our core right there. And a lot of the gift of listening and deep listening comes from being in that space.
Okay, now I want to know how you got from falling off the horse and hearing the horse to being able to do a horse body scan.
I don't know. I wish I had an answer. All I know is one day I was with a horse and I thought, you should do a body scan. And I don't know where that comes from, Wendy. I don't have an explanation for that one. Probably there is one. It was intuitive maybe, but it turned out it worked. So it's part of my...
Well, see, I thought we might need to connect that dot too, because there are a lot of things that just happened when you made that shift, that leap, you know, you got that little jump start. That's extraordinary. But it means it's not that far away.
It's not that far away from most of us is what I believe.
It's, you know, and not everybody has to fall off a horse, but just, in, you know,
I don't advise it. I don't advise it. Pretty shocking. Luckily I had water to fall into. People fall off horses and get very seriously hurt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Although, I ran into a barrel with my horse and I've got a lovely scar as a reminder, but I consider that like a beauty mark. You know, this is my proof. I did it. Yeah. I could have done it better. I wouldn't have the scar. But there are so many things though that I think we take for granted that get into lockstep. And I'll say lockstep just because it's a routine. It's rigid. It's regular. It's predictable. But when you step outside of that, then you realize, well, the world doesn't always work that way. There are other options. And you falling off the horse, it's just a way of saying, wow, how did I miss this? And what direction do I go? So what I see with you and your husband is that he's saying, okay, well, if we're going to make the leap to the farm, you might as well invest everything. And I want my own horse too, by the way. Mm-hmm. But this is a completely different lifestyle than you had 10 years ago.
Oh, tell
me
about it.
I'm saying 10, taking you before back to the other marriage and all that. You know, just this is, what would you have 10 years ago? What would you have said about this lifestyle?
Yeah, once in a while, I think with envy, you know, I know people, they're selling their houses in the country, moving into the condos in town, and they're going to the coffee shops and the theaters and the movies, and they're having a grand old time. I'm like, what? Now, why didn't we do that? This is an extraordinary lifestyle, actually. I just feel that I have to get out of the house every day. I have to in order to take care of these magnificent beings. I get fresh air. I get the big sky. I get the sun. And I get to smell them and be with them and feel them while I'm picking up the poo and bringing out the hay and bringing out the food. And when we had the cold snap 2 weeks ago, it made me want to cry. I was so cold and uncomfortable. But there's something about the elements and being in them and taking care of others. I put in a really big vegetable garden last year. We're still eating off of it from the freezer. We don't even buy vegetables anymore. It's all part of the lifestyle of coming out here to Willow Oak Farm. And it is so deeply fulfilling. It's hard, but I have the health and stamina for it. So does my hubby. We're going to just do it because it feels good.
Well, it looks beautiful. The pictures that you have taken, your beautiful pictures with your horses and just the area, you know, it's a whole mindset of relaxation and of, you know, yeah, I'm not talking about picking up the poop. But just that thing of just stepping outside and breathing and having the luxury of not having to look at a house right next to you or hear somebody's stereo playing loudly, or it's that thing of, wow, this is the earth. This is the planet. This is something that we take for granted. And yet we don't even connect to it unless we're in a space like that.
Well, truth in advertising, I can see my neighbors. There's a horse farm next door. He's a local farrier and my herd loves to run while they run and then put noses together over the fences. And then there's mm-hmm. a neighbor on the other side. We don't have a large lot. We have about 8 acres. So there's a feeling of other people, but the sky is huge. And, and you know, the water flows at the back along a stream. And up in the woods, we have a fire circle. And so, and you know, we can hear cars in the distant roads, but it's okay because it feels like there's this, I don't know, there's this oasis here. That's what it feels like is being created, that we're creating, and a place that people can come and really just recenter and remember who we are from that inner place.
I like that. And the reason I'm chuckling is because you're going, we only have 8 acres. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm in the city. I've got like maybe a third of it, you know, a third of a plot, whatever that is. And I'm looking out my window right now and I've seen like four or five houses down the street. And that's just on one side. Like, okay, wait. I've only got 8 acres. Okay, yeah. And I can see the sky here too. It's rather crowded.
Okay. I mean, we used to live that way. And it has its merits, I must say. There's something wonderful about neighbors that you can, throw a coffee pot at, but or whatever. But relatively speaking to some people's big, huge farms, it's modest.
Yeah. Well, and I grew up on a farm. I grew up out in the country. I went swimming in the creeks, and
you
can't do that now. Oh, gosh, yes, yes. From the time I was little, we were out in the country. And so my days, sometimes I would take the shortcut to the neighbors going through the woods out away from everybody else. And then, not walking on the roads because I could go the back path. Or we had ponds to skate on when the ice froze. We would go skating on the ponds. The first year that we went swam as soon as we could when the water wasn't frozen. Although Toby, our Labrador, as long as there wasn't ice on it, she was in it. It was February 22nd, and I'm in the Midwest. That's pretty cold.
Oh, my goodness.
We wanted to say that we swam when it was cold, and my stepbrother and I went down and hit the creek and like, yes, raw. Okay, that would be the polar bear thing. I'm not doing that again.
Oh, my goodness. But you grew up with woods, and aren't you fortunate?
Yes. Yeah. So it's just like, I know, and I love that environment, but it is, it's something that there's nothing, it's irreplaceable. And so to have that space to go out and get rid of the technology and to do what you're doing in your farm with your horses is a gift. And I think it's wonderful that you're able to share that with people and give them another way of seeing and being present for themselves, not just the horses, but the horses are the facilitators with this. And so you've created, as you say, an oasis. And I think that's fantastic.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to do it.
So people who would like to get in touch with you, this is, again, May and June for the first two sessions, and they're limited to 5. So at this point, do they just go ahead and connect with you online?
They could just go to the website, but Byrne is spelled B-E-R-N-E, so Rosalynn.com. And then when you get to the landing page, there's a tab that says workshops. You click on that. It sort of explains the day and what we'll be doing and the purpose. And then there's an application form, so I can just get to know you and make sure it's a good fit, and a PayPal button, and then we're off and going.
And if that isn't something you're interested in, she also does consultations. And so this is something you can also do to help get more in tune with your own intuitive abilities and what direction that might go. And you do that just, anywhere, right?
I will. I could come if you had a group of 5 people who wanted to put together a workshop at your own place. I could come there. So there are lots of possibilities for this kind of work. And the best way is just to go. There's a contact page on the website, and that comes into my email box. And then I write back to you, and then we're off and running with our direct exchange of communication. Also, I have a newsletter, so you can sign up for that on the website and just at least keep in touch that way with stories about what we're learning.
I was going to say, I like your book, Waiting in the Silence. I was reading over part of that and thinking, good grief, this is a great sci-fi.
Thanks. I liked it too.
Well, it's just that the thing of, what are we going with our technology? And I hadn't had a chance to even consider. I think it was, I don't know, maybe I interviewed you in 2014, but I just didn't catch that was the sci-fi connection there. And okay, yeah, if you have your phone hooked up to your brain, there's a downside, okay?
That's okay. I'm glad you're mentioning it. I really enjoyed writing that piece, even though it has horrifying elements. It was a really important novel for me to have come through. And that was sort of an interesting experience. I was in a hotel room. I'd been interviewing scientists all week for my research, and I was awakened in the middle of the night and just told write. And I started writing, and the next thing I know, it's become a novel, and that's what it was. It was just came right out from the subconscious or somewhere, some kind of guidance. But it was an extraordinary experience to write that book.
I'm going to check that out. Oh, we got to go. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. I love what you're doing, and I love your horses, even though I've never met them.
Thanks for following up, Wendy, and for your time with me.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And if you're listening, you know, there's so much out here that we still have to explore, whether it's technology or whether it's just being present with another being, another animal, another, in some way, shape, or form, consciousness. It's all possible. Thanks for listening. See ya.